Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host.
DT Zalrish.
Yeah, it all depends on where it's on the tech tree. Blah, 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 blah. Will you ever get it?
I like how you keep saying tech tree.
It's a representation from above of how the branches of the tree spread out. There you go.
Yeah. See, there you go.
Well, welcome to episode 237, featuring myself, DT Zalrish, Dan Q.
Back up your feed with feedback.
Makalua.
Oh, it's too early for Dan and his puns.
The Mian Team.
I approve of Dan's conduct for now.
Mad Jin.
Hunting out Dan's punny.
Podcast episode 236 feedback. We have a number of items here. First off, we have Talco having some amusements with Madjin's analytical nature. Madjin, you gave the wrong answer. Games are spreadsheets, and that is the immersion. But you can have a little bit of extra stuff on the side. So, you know, I think your comments on the previous episode are reasonable. Mega Bears fan has a few comments on the bad ideas. The removing cinematics. He doesn't like removing cinematics.
He was talking about his emphasis on that one wasn't that they took the pretty things. It was more of trying to go for realism-ish. It was more superficially and unimportant.
I'm not sure that's...
Information, I guess, is kind of a big thing in there. How much information you saw on the
map. Oh, that's true. Yeah. You know, I mean, you can look at the map and literally find out stuff about the gameplay. I think there is something to be said, though, because it is a history-themed game. To have enough historical type elements in the game that you still feel like you're playing a Civ game, you know? So there's that aspect and the gameplay aspect. Now, how much of that you need? Is it really required to be cinematics versus other ways of representing the wonders in game? I don't think the method matters, but they should stand out as major projects that they are, because they're a big investment in the game. When you roll up on a city with a bunch of wonders, you want to feel that city and how dangerous it is in someone else's hands versus yours, too. I think that adds.
Yeah, he was more against the idea that city screens and info tabs and stuff like that to find out about things like the economy tab to find out how what's making money and where things are or other such. And he'd rather look at the map and actually see a little bit more of that, which I guess is a bit of an issue because I find if the further we go into only having to look at the main screen to see everything, the less actual information you're going to get.
Yeah, you hard tap your desk that way. You really do.
Yeah,
I think the tab's got to stay. Now, making the UI layout more presentable and having more information more cleanly, that's plus. I think any game could use that. But yeah, I think tapping the tabs is still really important because you can look at everything at a glance, and sometimes you don't need all the other graphical noise. You really just care about the numbers, and it's nice to be able to go in there and just look at the numbers if you want to do that.
Yeah, and that's probably why the info mod, I actually forget the name of it, the one that gave more information on more screens was extremely popular. All it really did was just give you far more information on screens and integrated it into some screens. So, again, it was against the concept that Mega Bears fan is looking to push the game towards, which was more there. And actually, a very, very popular mod did the exact opposite of what he's wanting on the information side of things.
I think you'll lose depth necessarily, or you'll clutter the main UI, one or the other, if you do that.
Yeah, it's a balancing thing, especially for the developers, is how much do you put on the map? How much information can you see from the map? And then you have to question, okay, so you can see it all on the map, and if you know the game, then you know that this little thing here is this building, that little thing there does this, and you know all the stuff. But if you don't actually know the game inside and out, you won't necessarily connect that visual building to these are its stats, or this is what it does, or this is how it's affecting things. So it's important to still have places where you can go and say, okay, my city is producing this much.
Yeah.
And I think what you see on the screen should be open to change over time as well. you just founded your city, and it's probably pretty important to say, oh, look, I can see the granary on the screen. But maybe 15, 20 turns later, you construct a wonder. We can show the granary and the wonder, but maybe it's going to be getting a little crowded with the other things that we're showing on the screen. So now the granary is still there, but you just can't see it at a glance. You'd have to go on the city screen to see that list. Now you see the wonder because that's a more significant point to be able to see on the screen.
It's an interesting idea, actually. Have it, like, prioritize the top three or something. Most valuable stuff here.
Yeah, because, I mean, even right now, even if you do have a lot of wonders, they start getting hidden by the quote-unquote just population-building stuff as that gets higher. So it makes it actually a little harder to find things.
You can get some pretty silly-looking cities if, like, you mod the games, they go enormous, or just cheat to make them enormous or whatever.
I still enjoy my Stonehenge or my pyramids and water appearing in an adjacent water tile if I'm on a coast or something like that.
Oh, just for a wonder placement was hilarious. That was the best. Not really in a good way, but those aqueducts especially were impressive.
Yeah, wonders out to overwrite base buildings. I had a game the other day where I built the Sydney Opera House, but my harbor stayed up as opposed to showing the Opera House. And I'm like, oh, come on, I wanted to see that. How often do I actually get to build this?
No, I think what happened, Mackie, is they constructed the Opera House inside the harbor. So you can't actually see it. So it's really a marvel of engineering, and you should be happy for it.
No. I didn't spend a great engineer building that to not see it.
Mega Bear's fan's other point was being a board game, where he had said it was too much like a board game, and then we kind of went, wah, wah, wah. That's what it is. So.
Civ 4 versus 5, like, is there a checklist to evaluate which is more board game-like? Because he's talking about the ability to roleplay in Civ 4 versus 5, and with Brave New World being better than 5 Vanilla, but still not up to 4's roleplay level. But I don't see it personally. I've played both games. Of course, I played 4 a lot more, because I had just a gross amount of hours in that game. But I don't see it. 4 has a very board game slash Excel spreadsheet type layout, too. Probably more so. It's more micromanagement intensive. So I don't know, like, what makes someone feel that one is more immersive, less board gamey than the other?
Yeah, he said the term that he should have went for was empire management game or empire builder. I think his point is that the focus for Civ 5, for him, felt like army control. The one unit per hex and the hex-based movement. So he felt it was more of a tactical board game for war, and then the cities is kind of there. But obviously, with the expansions, that got better with religion and other stuff. But he somehow thinks that Civ 4 was better in that respect, that it was more empire management-y sort of style.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I've had a few friends say something along those lines, too, that they didn't like Civ 5 because the number of units you have to micromanage. And if you don't have StarCraft APM, or at least half StarCraft APM or something, it really does become an increasingly large percentage of your time spent on a turn is moving your units as opposed to managing your empire. That is true. When you're managing, like, 10, 15 cities in Civ 4, but you can move all your units in a stack, moving your units is a relatively small percentage of what you're doing. It's probably like 10% in a lot of cases. Whereas in Civ 5, it could easily be the majority of your turns. So I guess I could do see that.
Yeah, it's a question of what you think empire management actually is. And if you are taking it down to time place, like how much time you're spending managing the empire versus how much time you're spending managing the units, then yeah, you can definitely see that. But I go point back out that between Civ 4 and Civ 5, Civ 4 is the only one where I know people actually broke out Excel spreadsheets with calculations and stuff.
I still have one lying around somewhere. I don't use it much when I was playing, but I had one.
Yeah. So on that note, kind of questionable. There is empire management in Civ 5. It's that you don't have to spend so much micro time on it anymore. You can actually do more long-term planning.
A lot of the micro in Civ 4 was long-term planning. Like, if you look at the stuff they're doing in Succession Game of the Month, where there's actual player discussion and planning, and you're looking 50, 60, 70, 80 turns out, and these games are only like 200-plus turns in most cases because they're ending pretty fast because they're good players, it's really impressive. But a big part of that is the micro. Now, there's a skill to that, and if it's something you enjoy, then 5 is going to hurt, because you're losing core gameplay element from the previous game, but a lot of people don't like that, too. I don't know. I think that there's something for each person between the two in that regard.
I think a bridge in the way, and it's not going to be the same thing, but if you're playing Civilization V and you're finding you're not being able to micro enough, that not enough information is being presented, then to tie back to a previous point, there are mods out there that can flood the user interface, and you may or may not like the flooding, with information. And I think the thing also is that Civilization V tried to have this so that you can still micromanage, but you don't have to micromanage as much in order to be able to quote-unquote get away with it, in order to progress to whatever victory type and condition you want. It's not as steep in going up in difficulty levels in order to be able to master that. You can if you want to, but then at the same time while they did that, those people who wanted to micromanage, willing and able to put in that time, found that they couldn't get access to that information. And at a certain point, these mods that modify the user interface, they can only show you, quote-unquote, what is in the game.
Yeah.
Those things aren't changing gameplay. So at some point, it's, well, I could show you more, but I kept digging down into the dirt, and I've hit bedrock. There's nothing more.
Yeah, it's a bit of a question. I mean, Civ as a series is a 4X game, so it should always have empire management as a primary thing. It's really down to the question of balance between, are you trying to get the player to spend more time looking at an overarching empirical strategy sort of way of playing, or does the fighting and the combat actually matter? And I think Civ is the style of game that tries to balance both. Because he mentioned U4, but it being so overwhelming that he can't really play it just due to the learning concept. And U4 tries to pretend to be high-level empire management, though it's probably almost as much of a tactical combat thing to get deep into it than anything else. And, of course, Total War is about as complex as he wants, and Total War really doesn't have much in the way of empire management. Civ in general. Sometimes they hit it off and get good balance, and sometimes maybe not so much. You can always hope in future iterations that empire management comes back up a little bit.
There's quite a bit of time you can spend like thinking about what you're going to do each turn if you're considering all the city-states quests, what they each want, what each nation is going in terms of, like, are they going piety, can I build this wonder? I think if you're actually thinking about that, your turns will take a lot longer managing that as well. So I think if you're playing on like king or prince, you don't have to worry about those things. You may not realize you can worry about that every turn, but if you're playing on like immortal or higher, like I feel like you have to manage that enough. And if you put any more, I'm not sure if it's really beneficial.
Yeah, that's a fair point. There are things to think about. If you're just clicking through and hitting end turn as fast as you possibly can, then yes, you're going to be doing a lot of unit movement and then hitting end turn.
Either that or you may be in multiplayer.
Yeah, that's it. but yes, there is always external factors that you can stop and go check every turn to go see who's doing what on the wonder factor, or go check your spies. I mean, something that people don't necessarily do all the time. You have your spies out there, so instead of stealing tech all the time, you could just be bouncing your spies city to city, popping in and going to take a look at the city and seeing what they have and what they built, and keeping track of where they might be in the tech tree, or looking at the tech tree itself and seeing, oh, well, this particular tech just dropped its beaker count this turn, which means somebody just got it, et cetera, et cetera. So you can stop and actually spend more time looking at the state of the game.
This is a prime reason why when we ask someone, what are you doing right now? I'm playing Civ. We don't ask how many hours or how many minutes you've been playing the game. We might ask, well, what turn are you on?
Yes.
To measure your progression in the game.
Yeah, and I think you can also spend a lot of time even looking at, like, the diplomatic bonuses and minuses and see who you can deal with, who is a threat to you, you know? I think that's, like, another layer of stuff you can look at, and it just will slow you down quite a bit to thinking about what you're doing.
And there are also those players that will choose in single player, I'm going to save more or less every turn, and then, oh, this went this way, and maybe as a habit or just occasionally, it's like, I'm going to go back to that previous save now, and I'm going to do this alternate reality version of the game, and so then you start saving the files with B at the end of it to help distinguish yourself, and then you save it with C. And
then you get through the whole alphabet, and you have to go numerical.
Or you could just start doubling up on the letters, you know, not that I would know anything about this. You know, I'm just speaking hypothetically.
Yeah. Dan's never done that, right? All right.
Elsewhere in the thread for episode 236 feedback, Westwall says, I hope you guys are right, and the developers are making it impossible to be on great relations with everyone on the map. Now Civilization Beyond Earth and the expansion pack Rising Tide. The game is in serious need of some political intrigue and cloak and dagger type events that shake things up and change the nature of the game. I want to feel under pressure on the map, the kind of pressure that makes me want to hide in my capital city screen and kick back some scotch.
Hmm.
There's some interesting comments in this feedback from Rika as well.
going back to the snowballing stuff a little bit, so we're getting away from some of the Mega Bears fan comments, but Rika mentions that can't think of a single 4X that has struck a fair balance between basically having too much rubber banding versus having runaways. That's true. I can't either. Like, there's always a good bit of time in the games I play between when the game is functionally decided and when someone actually wins, or it's one of those situations where no matter how well you play, someone gets lucky from the rubber band mechanic and you're going to lose a lot to that. I've not seen a game that did that well, especially in 4X. It's true that the diplomacy system would ideally be your quote-unquote rubber banding, that the AIs would more dynamically switch to working with each other to stop the runaway. And that's been, unfortunately, one of the sources of challenge in games like Civ 4, too, is that one of the AIs would throw. It would just underexpand and never work to undermine the giant super AI. And it's the same thing with the player. It never worked to undermine the giant super player. So I don't know what you do there, but I think it's true that they do need to start shifting away from being nice to the superpower that's going to win for sure if nobody does anything.
The whole, why don't the AIs start working together and banding together to deal with that giant group that's starting to threaten all of them together? That is an actual important thing. That's not really rubber banding. That's more of survival of the fittest style. And if you aren't the biggest, you better get a band of people together to stop the biggest from eating you.
Yeah. To borrow some Civ 4 terminology, right now the AI, even in Civ 5, use that. We're doing fine on our own.
Yeah.
Yep. No,
you need to bring back a triggered memory, don't you?
Yeah. Shagalo picked that up and highlighted, you know, if people stop trading with those who get ahead, started trading more with each other, then they would already be able to gain ground, which is true. I mean, that's kind of the thing. If somebody's big and you're constantly throwing them more stuff, like trade routes and strategics and all that, well, guess what? You're helping them get bigger versus helping each other try and balance that. But Shagalo tied that in and said the one that always bugs him is when Civ A has a large army and attacks Civ B, who has a tiny army. Civ A always comes to ask me to help beat up on the weakling when it should be Civ B coming to ask me to help to defend against the bully. And yes, that's part of the diplomacy thing. And Westwald piled on that and said that Civ B, weakling, might even denounce you for declaring war and capturing a city of Civ A, which effectively you're helping them, but they hate you.
Yeah, it's always frustrating to see it snowball from across the map.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's something that's part of the difficulty, you know, they want to make it like as difficult for you as possible. Like, I wonder if that was something they intended or not, you know, just to let people snowball even harder against you so that like Immortor Deity is even harder. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like it to be the way you guys suggested. I just wonder sometimes, like, why it wasn't done, you know?
Need somebody to put the effort in?
Yeah, maybe.
It wasn't done because we weren't asked to design the game, damn it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why.
That's it. I haven't designed it, therefore, you get what you get. Good problem time. Is, I don't like either snowballing or rubber banding. I actually really hate rubber banding because that's basically, hey, look, you're losing. I hate that crap. If somebody's winning, it shouldn't be, oh, you're winning too much. Well, we'll just bring everybody else along.
Yeah, I just want to avoid situations where, like, you know you've won on, say, turn 100, but you can't end the game with a victory condition until turn 170. Those tones are kind of ridiculous, but you get the point. The game's over, but you still have the game to play. Like, screw that.
Yeah, there should be ways to catch up without rubber banding. But also that means that you also have to prevent the ability to snowball your way through. I mean, if a snowball efficiency of 5 is, say, one person on the continent, if you're playing continents, goes and eats all the other people on the continent, well, yeah, that's going to be a snowball AI pretty quick. But that shouldn't necessarily be the case. It's just that the way the mechanics get built, that it comes the case. And I'm thinking more specifically like mass spam of, say, great scientists.
Good point. The mechanics themselves can contribute to how quickly that snowball starts to grow.
Yeah.
And if you're balancing the catch-up mechanics against that, you can have the game stay contested for longer, for sure.
I'm a full believer that bigger is always better, and I'm sure we'll get hate mail on that. Because this is a 4X.
You have to incentivize expansion.
Yeah, but Civ 5 actually went the exact opposite direction. And
yeah,
it really
did.
Disliked that.
And I
dislike that you could basically build a city-state and call it a Civ. I really hate that concept. disincentivized actual expansion. In a 4X game where expansion is the big thing, I really hate it when things go like, well, we have to balance tall and wide. Screw you. Bigger is always better. Deal with it. But that also means you can't snowball. You can't build your mechanics where now in Civ 5, I've got 8 cities. I just slapped all these specialists into my universities in all 8 cities. Guess what? Now that I've got this, I'm getting a great scientist every 10 or less turns. And the person who didn't do that, well, you're going to be in the Stone Age.
Yeah.
I could very well see someone saying when it comes to expand, I don't necessarily agree with this, but expand, somebody could say, does not necessarily mean or have to be taking more territory. Perhaps expand is measured in other ways as well, from economy, diplomacy, espionage, religion, your cultural influence, that you don't have to go blah across the map to, and then order to be able to position yourself to do whatever it is that you want to be able to do. I hear that argument, and I think there certainly is at some point, yes, when we come to the mechanics, we want to be dealing with an ounce of prevention rather than a pound of cure. If the mechanics say just ICS, infinite city sprawl, even if it's delayed, okay, we can't ICS in this era, but we get to this next era, or we get this particular tech, then we're going to be able to do that. That's great. And I think there should also be, hey, I wanted to expand everywhere, but I ran up against this other AI that prevented me from doing so, and there isn't any more land to get to, and there's no settling in the water.
Well, you could throw your people in the water, but they might not last.
Depending upon the civ that we're talking about here, so then in which case, how else am I going to be able to expand? And anytime you get to an extreme situation where you must ICS or you cannot ICS in order to be able to deal with the snowballing and or deal with the rubber banding, then you're going to run into problems because you keep on treating symptoms rather than causes. You're not getting at the fundamental point.
Okay, I'm going to get in there and slap you down a little bit. Expansion is not ICS. I really hate it when people put those two things together. Expanding has nothing to do with ICS. Expanding your empire could be dropping a city every 6 tiles and taking up as maximum space and actually growing or conquering or growing your city. Expansion has nothing to do with packing in tiny little cities and doing the most minimal possible stuff in those cities, including not even raising their population very high. You can build out an empire and expand, but that is not ICS. I could end a game with 40 cities, but if those 40 cities cover the entire planet, that doesn't mean I ICS'd. That just means I have 40 cities.
I do not think that infinite city sprawl is always going to be equated to expansion. I had prefaced it by saying that this was the view of some that they would say, okay, expansion equals ICS, but I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that's one way.
Most importantly, the problem with the expansion versus not expansion comes down to big cities do not count effectively. You could have a 40-pop city, but in Civ 5, that 40-pop city is probably going to produce less overall culture, science, yield, whatever combination than 4-10-pop cities. And they also grow slower. Even though there are far more people in one city, apparently they don't have sex, unlike all those people out in the middle of nowhere.
All right, a few things here. First off, I agree. Taller cities should be more important. Second, whether you're in a large city or a smaller city, having more sex does not necessarily mean you're going to end up with more progeny. However,
more fancier, the better the birth control. I know realism versus gameplay and all that, but if you look at an actual civilization, an actual country, you have some really big cities that are the powerhouse things, but they have plenty of small cities that are for other things.
Yep.
So if you're balancing somewhere in the middle, that's more like an actual civilized empire.
Yeah, if the game got balanced in such a way that tall cities were extremely important, but you still had small cities,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't that every city had to be tall. If the game mechanics are built that around, like, every city has to be tall before it does something useful for the empire, and useful for the empire is based around a variety of different things.
To Mackie's point, you may have a cluster of a lot of small cities right here that aren't doing much of anything. And then over here you have fewer cities, but they are larger, and that's in terms of their population. That's in terms, of course, tying them back to the hexes that they have and the hexes that they are working. We're not necessarily talking about dot mapping here. So, yes, I'm slapping back a little bit.
If you still had Indy, and maybe that could be part of their special ability, is that they can have more tall cities than other empires could. Maybe there's a limit on the number of tall cities your empire could support.
or something like you have a small city that is all farms, which
yes,
is the case.
A lot of
places.
U.S.
U.S. and Canada, where we have a lot of farmland. But does all that food stay there and make those people tall?
No.
No, that food goes somewhere else to the city that is very tall, has that production, has that science, has that other stuff, but can't feed itself because, it took over a huge amount of space. So building out the empire mechanics to actually do that. That way, when you do expand, yes, you can expand and drop cities down for resources and other things like that, but primarily you need tall cities to run your empire. And that should easily take care of the problem of too much ICSE style stuff without allowing for a snowball. Because when you make tall cities the important thing, then snowballing is a little bit less of a pain.
Was using ICS as an example, if for no other reason that I figured that that would elicit a particular response, and I guess I did in fact get that response.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, my personal opinion on empire management should be that ICS should not exist in the game, because that's just crap. Seriously. There's no empire ever that got built around three people in this spot taking up all this space and three people in that spot taking up that space. But I also don't think that you should be trying to play a city-state. That small but tall, I don't think should be considered an empire. I mean, some people like playing like that. Some people don't like the 4X at all, and they prefer just to, you know, mess around with a couple cities. And I think that's fine if they're playing on middle difficulty. But if you actually want to win the game, I think you should actually be using all four of the Echoes. Do you know, in Venice, they got big, expanded a little bit, but then they got crushed by everybody around them. There is no superpower that was two city size. So
Venice had a lot of territory, though. Genoa is a closer example of what you're going for.
Yeah, but still, the reality is you should have to get bigger, or at least get big enough to have the appropriate amount of production and stuff. If I can make a city-state take four cities and keep them all in Civ, and you only have three, that city-state should become the empire, and you should be made city-state.
Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide Hybrid Affinities.
I'm Pete Murray, joined this week by Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide co-lead designer David McDonough. Dave, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
So we have something cool to talk about today. We're going to talk about the hybrid affinities in Beyond Earth Rising Tide. So Dave, the hybrid affinities were created as a way to expand the affinity system.
Mm-hmm. It's important to note for all of the hybrid affinities that they aren't just averages, aren't just sort of little of this, little of that, of their two constituent affinities, but we really try to make sure that they had a distinct identity in and of themselves, a distinct character that you might independently arrive at if you had equal enthusiasm for the two.
There was an article posted on Civilization.com by the marketing manager at Firaxis Games, Peter Murray. Hybrids represent a society that may have a prominent affinity, but also consider alternative possibilities for humanity. So the resulting hybrids not only show interesting ideas, the basis of all really good science fiction, but also have discrete gameplay benefits. And based on some of the descriptions, I don't know if I want to use the word discrete there, but okay, a player might start developing down one affinity before switching mid-game in response to a need to change a technological focus or change in resource availability. With a new affinity focus, the old affinity level still offers advantages for the player rather than having to start their progress from scratch. And I must say, in Civilization Beyond Earth right now, I think I'd like to go purity. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And the float stones on the other side of the map. So, yeah, supremacy, great, rock, let's go.
The big ideas here were to offer a broader range of affinity identities and affinity perspectives, offer the player more options, more customization channels, and then also add units to the game that could further differentiate the way armies might play and offer players tactical options that not only Beyond Earth hasn't had, but no Civ has had, things that are a little bit wilder.
Supremacy purity represents a society where human beings are dominant but have engineered elaborate robots that serve their needs. And I don't know why, but I thought of the Jetsons. Humans being rule and robots and machines execute at their whim. Purity harmony idolizes the human form, but uses the genetic discoveries of the new world to push the idealism to previously impossible heights.
They engineer extremely elaborate, powerful robots, but they make sure that they aren't sentient. They don't become robots. They use robots as servants, as vehicles, as tools, so that their human overlord is always supreme. So a lot of their unique units are powerful robots, but they're all remote operated or operated by some sort of rider or driver. They don't operate themselves.
Harmony Supremacy envisions humanity as a flexible extension of its technology and planetary ecosystems, not bound to either, but willing to draw power from the best advantages of both machines and organisms.
Purity and harmony, that's sort of taking the idea of a human form, but maybe making it more godlike.
That's really a good way of putting it. It's hard to hybridize anything with purity because they're so rigid, maybe, so fanatical. But so we just kind of played up on that. We said, how would this fanaticism express itself if these people decided that one way was better versus another way? So if we assume that they learned a bit about like genetic manipulation and sort of artificial evolution from the planet that we land on, a little bit of the harmony flavor, they would use that not to become more harmony-like, but they would use that to take the human form and improve it and push it. Their style is this, everything's kind of very bronze, it's very like kind of Greco-Roman idealistic, very demigod, like you said.
And then finally, there's a very interesting harmony and supremacy.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with this, because these two are perhaps the most divergent, at face value, harmony and supremacy.
Right.
And so we say, well, what would they have if you were trying to embrace both? And the answer is like, well, they would have an unbelievable mishmash of crazy juxtaposition. So they're definitely the craziest hybrid. The idea here is that it's a power by any means attitude. They don't see a need to focus in either the mechanical or the organic, but they say, why can't we have both? We can have power from both. We can have lessons from both. And so they create these super bizarre, pseudo-impossible cyborgs, these hybrids, these living machines that are neither robot nor organism, but something in between.
There are unique hybrid affinity military units scattered throughout the technology web. These can be constructed when a player reaches a certain threshold of affinity levels, and players do not need to confine themselves to a single hybrid affinity. With careful planning, a player could take advantage of both supremacy purity and purity harmony hybrid units in their arsenal. Well, well, well. Can we have our cake and eat it too now? Sweet.
Cake.
You pick a hybrid not only for this style, but if you wanted to make sure that your army remained a little more versatile, if you weren't sure like what kind of situations you were going to get into and you didn't want to fully embrace not just the advantages but the tactics that go along with the straight affinity,
right?
You would pick a hybrid and say and leave yourself some options. And the cool thing is that every unit has an independent upgrade path. The hybrids, while they require level and multiple affinities, the level you've required is always less than what it would require to go straight. So if you're playing the game and you find you have a spread of affinity XP, it can often be an advantage to hybridize early because you'll get your military upgrades faster. You'll get your army powered up faster by accepting hybridization. So it's an interesting trade-off. There's a lot of power, obviously, in the straight affinities, and you still need to do that if you're after the victory condition. The hybrid affinities don't lead to independent victory types. But if you're in a war, if you're in a tight spot, if you're in a continent or an ocean where there's a mixture of resources and hybridization has been making sense, you can power up just as fast, if not faster, by hybridizing.
I found it strange that they only have the units pass a certain point instead of early on in terms of some of the basic units. They didn't bring them until like later in the game, which seems like a pretty big waste to me. It's like you have to go purity, then suddenly you're like, hey, I don't want to do that anymore. You know, you can't just start from that path. I find that a little bit unfortunate, like a missed opportunity.
I don't know. Maybe it's more representative of Yondurth is right now, where certain levels that you get going from level 1, you know, level 2, right now there really isn't anything emerging in terms of the look or the feel of the capability of, say, your military units, because that seems to be the focus on, apparently, when we say military units, that does not include air units, from what we've seen. But anyway, on land and by sea, it's kind of, well, you know, we both landed more or less at the same time on this planet, and you're here, and I'm there, and, oh, yeah, we're going down this particular point of the technology web, and then you diverge, because maybe as was suggested in there, resources. Or maybe it's the fact that your neighbor went purity and you can't possibly go purity either because they're a dimwit. So clearly purity is not the way to go, so you have to go supremacy. So there are all of these in-game and out-of-game things that are probably going to be influencing, just like it is right now, with what it is that you're going to be able to do and want to be able to do when it comes to these affinities. And yes, you can still go pure affinity as well, but it sounds like, especially the part about unique hybrid affinity military units scattered throughout the technology web, heck, it could even end up being, you know, I got this particular technology so I could construct this building, but it also tells me I can construct this unit now. That sounds like fun. I could use that. Wait, I'm only at level 3 in supremacy, but I need level 5. Okay, so then you start looking at the technology web to essentially get at the unit that way. You know, you weren't purposely going for that unit, but now you're going to, like, backfill, maybe go to a technology that focused a little bit more on supremacy that you weren't looking at before.
The only unfortunate part is that it kind of forces you into one of those three affinities, or else you have a crappy army until you get that 7-7 or 6-6, you know? I don't know, I'm not really feeling this in terms of how it starts out, but I don't know. I just like to see this as its own mechanic, as it, have it just be fleshed out and have affinities just be separate. Because it feels like it kind of guides you through the tech path, and maybe you want to do something else, you know, but now you're kind of like, okay, I have to grab this, okay, I have to grab this, or else I'm going to be weak.
Well, okay. If they stuck with the tech tree, they have to fix the curve, the affinity curve. Because in vanilla it was, you got very little, you got very little, you got very little. Oh, I might get affinity 4. Oh, I just hit 5 techs, now I'm at affinity 12. And that really, especially in vanilla, forces you to hit the affinity text, because if somebody else is hitting the affinity text and you're not, you lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a light switch.
Yep.
What I wish they would do is just let you get XP and then just let you put it on any affinity you want.
Well, no, I wouldn't want to do that. The whole point, I guess, in theory anyways, of spreading it out is the fact that you can build different empires with different affinities. If you just got pure points from it and then you put it into a level of whatever you want, then there's no flavor.
And it also goes to you're not having to research everything in the technology web like you would, say, a technology tree in other sieves. So you're going to be selective. And it's like, okay, for instance, I've researched ecology. Workers are now immune to miasma. Yeah, that sounds pretty harmonious. So there, that gives me something towards harmony.
Yeah. Now, what they really need to do is spread the affinity points around. There's whole sections of the tech web that you just never go to because they're not as useful. But if, say, the purity random bonuses actually give you more affinity towards the purity and stuff basically off the main tech victory condition choices, then that would actually have you going out and modifying your empire for that particular game slightly differently than you would for some other game. Like, you'd actually have more choices about how you build your empire.
Well, I mean, you have the choice now, but viable. Yeah. Choices, so we can avoid Senate topics saying, you know this part of the tech web? Just pretend it's not there. Okay? We won't talk about it ever again. It is irrelevant.
Yeah, that's 60% of the tech web, or upwards of 80%, depending on which affinity you chose.
Yikes.
I think for Rising Tide, they did spread it out, didn't they? Like, they also changed the coloring and such for the tech web. Didn't they show that in one of the videos?
I could be.
They need to put a number there, too, that you can see, like, at a glance, because I hate having to look at each tech. Okay, plus 18 for this one. Okay, plus, like, you can't just see it on the tech web. They need to put a number there so you can quickly glance.
To that point, for the live stream that was then archived on YouTube, Defiant Mars went through and watched the video and made note of all the different units that appeared and the choices that were shown. I mean, yeah, okay, still subject to change. The game isn't out yet. But it would show us the particular choices that you would have during the course of gameplay. And they covered Purity Supremacy, Harmony Purity, and Supremacy Harmony. In terms of things that you could get, there was recurring options. It's, okay, this is specific to this particular unit at whatever level it happens to be for this particular hybrid, but there were constant choices that were continually popping up, like ignoring zones of control, all terrain costs one movement, or my particular favorite, automatically heal every turn.
This should be a separate one, just for Dan.
What's that?
Go bully stations for money.
Oh, bullies. Are you trying to make me cry live on the show?
Yeah.
That's not in the game. Are you really pushing my buttons here, man?
Yep.
Really pushing my buttons.
I just got that achievement yesterday, the 3,000 gold achievement. Bully city states.
Okay, well, and just as an aside, seeing as how you mentioned a number, and people know I love numbers on this show, when you reach more than 200,000 bullied gold in Civilization V, come talk to me. We'll form a club.
Going hybrid in Rising Tide is more than just cool military units. There's a lot of power to be gained there, a lot of sort of personalized or customized play that can go one way or the other depending on how it matches up with, for instance, your diplomatic choices, the choice of faction that you made, and the kind of game that you're trying to win, the kind of victory you're trying to go for.
Yeah, so hey, we had a whole hour-long video over on YouTube for the whole diplomacy changes with Frank Wiper in Brasilia here.
Shoot it, aggravate it. That's a great plan.
He's already mad at me. I mean,
yeah, that's good. That's good. Keep him mad.
It's not about keeping them mad. It's about not being afraid to take them out of my way. They had science that I wanted.
They had science. This is the XCOM version of research. I have to shoot things in order to learn more about them.
See, you understand. I don't know why you're... And I mean, all these upgrades that I get, it's going to be bringing in some pretty strong units.
Franco Iberia, they don't even get their personality traits until after they get 8 virtues. It's like, I know they get virtues faster, but that's kind of like, wow. That kind of pushes it back quite a bit.
The marvel that we have on here, the giant fungus. So you see these hexes. Let's turn on, see if it shows it for these ones.
Whoa!
Yeah, look at that.
Whoa!
So we're definitely going to want to activate these and found new cities around there.
I think you will. Fungusopolis is going to be just lovely this time of year.
And in the comments, some of the people were, kind of, I don't know. They were talking about Brasilia's one, which somebody pointed out would be kind of useless in multiplayer. Well, they said it wouldn't be, but I'm not sure.
Well, Brasilia's one is that you get more war score?
30% more war score.
Yeah, so that'll be used in multiplayer. Is there any way to make peace?
Yeah, they were talking that the players will just not accept a peace treaty. It's like, well...
Well, then you're dead.
Yeah. So.
Black Leon. And suddenly, Brasilia becomes worst sponsor in multiplayer with only weak additional diplomatic capital income. They also get a little extra income. And I think, if I remember, they get extra diplo income from killing units.
Huh.
Can't help but notice your citizens are a little unhealthy.
A little bit. I've been expanding fairly quickly, but I'm going to be able to rectify that in short order. I'm sure.
Yeah, popping a third city won't be a problem.
You know what? I don't need your negativity.
In multiplayer, since you have to use diplomatic capital for traits and for services, I think suddenly Brasilia is going to get their traits and services a little faster. If you don't want to make peace and they sit there shooting you and wrecking you constantly and taking up the diplo capital, I think they'll do better than the person who refuses to make peace.
These guys are definitely made to just fight and keep fighting.
And we know at some point in the game you're going to be able to buy buildings and units with diplomatic capital as well. So that could be a really long burn.
Yeah, don't mind me as I just bend you over and take all your stuff. And by the way, I just use that to build my empire way bigger than you.
Sounds disgusting, but it's really lovely.
Yep. Well, you know, it's good for the skin. Helps you moisturize. Contains essential oils.
Tying back to the episode 236 feedback and Mega Bears fan from his bad list for Civilization V with regards to the cinematics, even though the focus, as was said during that time, was not so much on the Wonder movies, but apparently, according to Will Miller in a tweet to CivFan Supremacy King 2, there will be new Victory movies.
Oh, really?
And Rising Tide, yes.
Wow.
Shiny.
Yeah.
Disappointing. Did you say the word movie?
Movies, plural, even.
Wow. Wow.
Got immersion.
See, look how much progress I was able to make without shooting any aliens.
You didn't kill anything.
Killing anybody. It's like I'm developing.
Is that progress?
How can it not be progress? We've left behind a planet of violence and desperation, and we've founded an Elysian colony full of artists and scholars, scientists, poets, philosophers.
Likely to get destroyed by the aliens as they come in.
I think you're overestimating their chances of success.
Okay, so we're shifting gears here. Freak! Moving from Beyond Earth to Civ 6! Woohoo! So, in yet another long line of topics for a game that doesn't exist...
It exists in our heart, Matt. It exists in our heart.
Yes.
200 came up with an idea, and that's really what he called it, Civ 6 idea.
The topic, literally, is Civ 6 idea.
Yeah. So, he says, in most games, there's unsettled land because it's generally undesirable. The problem statement is that there's too much empty space once you hit, like, industrial renaissance. Basically, because of the way city border works, it's all culture expansion, but it only goes so far. And then you have all this empty crap land that no one wants. Back to what Dan had said when we were talking about the feedback from previous. See? Hi, Ian. So, the question comes down to how do we deal with that problem? He thinks that there should be land claiming at a certain point, because that's basically how it works in real life. And real life example, Canada owns everything above a certain parallel, including all this empty space up north that has a bunch of islands. And we said, it's ours. And everybody else went, okay. We didn't go drop a giant city up there to culture out the land slowly.
Not yet.
Okay, global warming, yada, yada, yada. Everybody
Politicast, let's go, go, go!
Go, go, go! Anyway, so that, he says, is a bad idea. And for the most part, everybody can kind of agree that seeing huge sections of the world uncultured or unclaimed is kind of weird after a certain point in time. But he thinks that possibly throw out city-states to start existing there. They just randomly pop up. Or city-states can throw out some more settlers to actually claim a little bit more land. That's kind of where he wants to go with that. A lot of people agree, and Zladen wrote a freaking huge thing in response. Thinks that there should be a new colonial age where we have new units called the colonists. And I think we've even talked about this constantly before in previous talk topics about colonies and crap like that.
Oh, yes.
As we've seen in Civ 5, mid-game, so from the Renaissance on, new quote-unquote cities are completely useless because they can't catch up in time. I mean, not completely useless, but actual catch-up mechanics for later game settling just doesn't match reality. What no one, I don't think, actually talks about is just actually allowing a land claim style system. So you have cities here, you know, cities around an area, and they're culturing out territory to actually work. But in theory, you should be able to also say, all of this land over here is mine. Then it comes down to a question of, do other people agree that it can be yours? And maybe then it solidifies as you go up through the game and it says, okay, somewhere in the game in the diplomacy system, you have the ability to agree or disagree with land claims. And if everybody agrees, and that is the basis of whatever for creating new spaces, because that in reality is also a sort of thing. In reality, at some point, all the nations got together and leaders got together and said, okay, I will acknowledge that you own that space as long as you acknowledge that I own this space. And it became kind of a de facto requirement for diplomacy.
Yes, move past the de facto and do, and actually, quoting from Joff Wu here, unclaimed tiles is needing de jure claims, so that's by right according to law, while de facto actually existing. Have a formal mechanism to say, this is my land, we know it's my land, this is where I'm concentrated. But at the same time, I don't want to settle a city there just to claim it, because that's not only not going to help my empire, that's actually going to be a burden on my empire. No matter how much culture I accrue, my culture is not going to be able to get to those tiles until turn 200 plus or whatever the heck it is. And if you want to be able to settle this crap land, then you're going to have to declare war because I've claimed it. You're not just going to be able to settle here just because I didn't want to put a crappy city in that particular location. So, yes, I agree that the land should be claimed, but claiming does not necessarily and should not, especially when the land is crap, mean that a city is settled there or even that a colony is there.
Yeah, so help with all those times when you've kind of got like an odd shape to your civ borders and you've got that spot maybe that's in a desert area and it has no food. But because the AI is dumb, it sees open land and it wants to settle there.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want to get fresh with me, then just ask me out on a date. Seriously, you don't have to settle close to me.
You don't have to get up all my borders, dude.
And more specifically, if you have a coast, you're dropping your cities 6 away from each other so that each of them has 3 hexes.
There's just one grassland tile that's not covered by borders.
Yeah, that one thing on the coast, then some jerk on the other side of the planet goes, I see a single spot I can go city, sit down. I don't care that the person bought up all the tiles around it. I will go sit there.
Oh, and Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, of course, adds an even extra element to that. So I see you've got a city on a coast there. Yeah, I see you've only so far claimed a couple of hexes out.
Oh,
yeah.
Don't mind me as I drive my CD by you.
Drive-by.
New drive-by mechanic.
Maybe they could get some sort of territory generator that just pushes out your territory like one line per turn until the whole map's like taken up. You know, maybe that could work.
Now, there should be some sort of distance related and some sort of other mechanic. There should be a mechanical thing. During the actual colonial era, where you had a bunch of countries in Europe running around laying claim to literally everything, whether or not somebody was there or not, at some point they were claiming islands and other such things without actually doing stuff to them. And they still own them today because no one said no. And they just said, well, this is ours because we're using it for trading.
The only thing I'm really a bit worried about is, like, if you start getting all these new city-states, and, you know, you're planning on attacking someone, then you have to go squish, 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 and then look like more of a warmonger than you would have been by going through there. I wonder how it's going to be implemented, and if it can be implemented in a way that's not going to mess everything else up, or make you feel even more crowded than you do in the game already.
Well, you wouldn't necessarily have to declare on a city-state, you just go occupy their land.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in Civ 5, I don't know how it would work in the next game, but yeah, in this case, yeah.
It can work any way you want.
Yeah.
Because it exists in your heart, so whatever your heart tells you, that's how it works. See?
I like that.
There really should be some sort of way to take land and claim it, and have strength of claims. And then eventually, of course, have competing claims, which could start border wars, which could end in a peace treaty that both of you agree to a certain border.
And perhaps blocks could be generated, and they would just say, like, okay, this is this land, and there doesn't necessarily have to be a city-state there.
Yep. And then you can find out later that all the cool strategic resources were in your claimed lands, and then everybody gets all questionable about whether or not you really have a claim to it, and then you have to go drop a city.
Yeah, you can get some really interesting international claims, like when Mother Britain settles with Uncle Sam instead of you. Oh, wait, this is... Never mind. Moving on.
Uh-huh.
Thanks.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
You can call Mackie too, 555. 555. 5554. People always forget the last digit is 4, not 5.
You guys used to get all those random calls from people, like, trying to reach other people and such. I remember those old episodes.
Whoa. How long have you been listening to the show?
Oh, I went back because I wanted to see the progression from the early Civs. And I was painting in my house, and I was like, I went back to the beginning of Civ 5 because I wanted to see people's reactions as Civ 5 came out and Gods and Kings came out. So I started to, like, went back and just, like, 100 episodes back and started listening.
Okay, people calling into the show looking for other people. That was season 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I listened to some of those old ones.
I wish we'd get some more of those.
Yeah.
They're fun.
Yeah, there were some funny calls.
Occasionally the Polycast number gets telemarketers, but they don't leave a message. They're boring.
Ah, yeah. They don't bother to do that.
Those people suck.
Oh, I wish I'd been connected to Ty. I could have trolled.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, yes, I would. Okay, sir, what's your address? 555. And they'd be like, sir, we can't find your address in our system. And you call yourselves a tech company.
Exactly.
All right, so before I get axed once again by a lot of electricity, let's do the closing here. Thank you for joining us on Polycast Episode 237. I'm the Mean Team, as always, joined by regular co-hosts Dan Q.
I am the most abstract of art.
Makalua.
Something Thunder?
I'll show you something fun.
I have distracted by your thunder in the background.
Imagine.
Only sometimes me.
And guest co-host DT Zarish.
Supremacy Fury, boys.
You have to say Mackie 3 times in text as well. We forgot that step. Oops. Oh.
Mackie.
And with that, Mackie appears on the call.
She does.
What?
You got Mackie called. Apparently that's an effective summoning technique.
Thanks for playing along.
I wasn't trying to. That was just Skype being a little bit of a putz.
You were going to say something else, weren't you? Putz was not the first word you were thinking. No.
Not really, no.
But that, I think, hits a different topic today.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah.
Research lab.
And it is annoying. Why is all that land empty? Why does no one have it?
Oh, I thought you were saying, oh, it's annoying, we have another topic. Wait, what?
Yeah. Talk about this all day long.
What? No, since when?
Somebody said that there's a barf since Spawn.
Well, I think Mackie might have a symbol for a Rye, tying back to Madgen's point about eating. On episode 237B of Polycast, Mackie will respond to Rye stealing all of the cookies.
You only thought you stole them all. I have hidden stashes everywhere.
Everywhere. I'm now still also having this vision of having a debate. Fig Newton, cookie or not, but let's flavor. That's
more of a cakey thing.
That's way too off the rails.
A little.
And that's saying something for this show.
If we were a train track, we'd have a bunch of random spirals in there. You know, when they're talking about hybrid it's not ideologies. What do we call it?
Affinities.
Affinities. Thank you.
The video, by the way, is about 30 minutes in length, and there was one response from Sid Meier's Civilization. As I said before, Sid Meier's Civilization is now an entity unto itself, and it responds to YouTube comments and tweets. It's really creepy. Valin asked, will there be some new Steam achievements with Rising Tide? Yes, we will have new achievements in Rising Tide.
Really?
No, why would you put new achievements for an XP? I don't know.
I would like to parse the wording here, though, because Valen said, will there be some new achievements, which to me implies...
Some old ones.
Well, it implies to me like four or more, because if it was few, we would say three, but seeing as how they said there will be new achievements in Rising Tide, that's plural, so I predict two whole new achievements in Rising Tide. Well done. They're very difficult to get to, so you'll have to spend hundreds and hundreds of hours of playing the game just to get one. That's my prediction right now. Yep. I love the English language.
Welcome to the Weekly for Access live stream. I'm Pete Murray, joined once again by Civilization Beyond Earth, Rising Tide.
But there might be people listening that still don't understand what you're saying, so you might as well go ahead and say it now.
No one's listening. You can just edit it.
No, you say it so that when I edit it, it's actually
it sounds
in the
like you said it.
As long as I can put ARK on the you never get to play in my game as an AI list. I seriously do not give a damn about John Smith.
I hate to point out, it's Adam Smith.
See? I don't care about Adam Smith either.
Yeah, and then in the offshoot for Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, because, hey, Fraxis has said this is going to be a franchise. You're going to have this combination of Beyond Earth and The Sims, where you can go really meta into your cities, and then you'll have restaurants downtown that will serve the fungus and restaurants uptown that won't, and then you'll have this strife within your city, and people will want to revolt, and then you can take it back to Beyond Earth and play that out in a scenario. I may have thought about this too much, but...
Maybe.
The Sims.
So, 9 out of 10 times that I try this at my desk, moving a worker past the aliens, it works fine. As soon as I try to do it on the live stream, they'll eat the worker.
Workers are delicious.
Okay, sorry, no, yes, continue.
Stop being funny.
What was the silence?
silence. Mackie has been silenced.
I don't know why. Sometimes something is really not that funny, but then you start laughing ridiculously for no reason.
Yeah. I'm glad that, you know, the closing isn't the next thing. It's like, on a positive note, the show's coming to an end.
Bye.
Joel.
Not quite. Pocket Tactics said, there's a no-frills port of 1994 Sid Meier's classic Colonization has appeared on the App Store, to which Will responded, oh, shit, I'm never going to see David McDonough again. It's far enough along in development now. I can't probably go out and scratch David's name off, but maybe they can put a little asterisk. Was only here until...
Until the port came out.
Okay, so let's lately what he actually said. And yes, Dan, I actually said that on purpose in that way.
Okay. I suddenly have this thought where I want to have a T-shirt that just says, ask me about... Okay.
Dan, I think you might get into a little trouble with that.
I only got to wear that one into work.
If we start talking about bribing Shaka, how much is Dan going to respect us?
Can Can I measure it in fractions? Is that possible?
I prefer decimals.
For the benefit of everybody who's screenshotting madly trying to figure out what the stats for these things are, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to click on the other ones.
Record date September 5th, 2015. Salization Beyond Earth Rising Tide Clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth Sound Clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.